Today is what? Oh, thanks, Pierre. At June 2nd, 2021. This is Shitpost. I'm your host, Jared Holt. Let's go. Was audio of General Michael Flynn, a former national security advisor to President Donald Trump, telling a crowd at a conference in Dallas, Texas, that a coup, specifically a military coup like the one carried out in Myanmar, should happen in the United States to make Donald Trump president again. This was just what happened to be the most viral clip from that conference, which took place over Memorial Day weekend at the Omni Hotel in downtown Dallas, and a venue just down the street, decorated inside to be a replica of a Wild West town. Joining the show this week, we've got Stephen Monticelli. He's the publisher of Protean Magazine and an independent journalist based in Dallas, and he was there through the whole damn thing. He'll be joining us in just a moment. Before we get into the interview, I want to take a moment to pause and kind of reflect on what this event was. This was a three-day conference taking place over a holiday weekend in Dallas, Texas, the most populated metropolitan area in the United States. It was attended by a sitting member of Congress, Representative Louie Gohmert, and the chair of the Texas GOP, Alan West, in addition to Texas's agriculture commissioner, Sid Miller. Sharing the stage with these high-rank officials were QAnon nuts like Jordan Sather, and QAnon and MAGA folklore heroes like Sidney Powell, Michael Flynn, and Roger Stone advisor Jason Sullivan. Nothing about this conference was subtle. When I say it is a QAnon conference, I'm not speaking in hyperbole. The logo for this event, which was called For God and Country Patriot Roundup, had WWG1WGA, which stands for the QAnon slogan, where we go one, we go all. Promotional flyers had QAnon slogans. Speakers on the stage directly addressed QAnon conspiracy theories. And the organizers of the event used QAnon-styled nicknames to refer to themselves online. Renting out an event space like this, attracting high-profile speakers, a whole graphics suite, animations, videos, lighting, all of this adds up very quickly, which gives us the indication that there was money behind this conference. The attendance of those powerful officials also gives us a hint that there was some kind of momentum or power behind this conference as well. What this points to is a sort of institutionalizing of QAnon among some GOP circle. Louie Gohmert, for example, was never the most mild-mannered or level-headed member of Congress, one could say, but he does have power, and he does get in right-wing media a lot. So appearing at this event was very validating for this larger conspiracy movement. I fear that this event is just the first of many like it to come, and that as time goes on and Republicans fail to confront the big lie the election, misinformation and disinformation that led to an attack on the Capitol, that we'll see more and more of this in the future. Joining us after the break is Stephen Monticelli. He was there all weekend, and I can't wait to hear what he saw.
Madman lost his damn mind in the West. Love less, kidnapped or down, nothing less. Now I must put his behind to the test. Then through the shadows in the saddle, ready for.
Joining Shitpost now, we have Steve Monticelli. He's the publisher of Protean Mag. He's an independent journalist in Dallas. Sometimes you can read him in places like The Daily Beast. Steven, what's up, dude?
Howdy. Glad to be on with you.
Well, you know, I hope you had a good Memorial Day weekend. It certainly seems like it was a bit more eventful than mine was here in D.C. A QAnon conference came to your backyard in Dallas there.
That's right. Yeah, I had perhaps the most eventful and interesting Memorial Day weekend in recent memory for myself.
Well, you know, part of the reason I'm excited to talk to you today is because you're one of the few reporters who got out the other side of that conference without getting ejected. You know, friend of the show, Will Sommer, and vice reporter Vegas Tenold got the boot. I think another person got the boot.
That's correct.
That kind of mirrors my own experience covering events like this, which is that, you know, they really don't like people who are really familiar, like intimately familiar with their stuff, seeing it up close. And I always think that is such the weirdest thing.
Right. You know, I had a feeling that when we have an event coming to town in Dallas where they don't really want anybody to be inside to be able to cover what's happening, that there's probably nothing good going on inside. And I don't mean nothing interesting or nothing newsworthy. I more so mean, you know, nothing that they necessarily would want to broadcast without, you know, having the ability to control the narrative to a certain extent. I could make some strained analogies to organizations in the past that probably wouldn't have let me report on them, but I'll let the listeners infer what I mean when I say that.
All right. But you got in. Tell me, what was it? I mean, what was it like? It was you, and then the other person I saw was Brace Belden from True Enough, which totally shredded my brain.
Right. So, you know, my approach was informed by when I saw Travis View post that he had bought a ticket and been summarily rejected based on his, you know, track record of podcasting about QAnon. So I thought to myself, okay, well, maybe I should try to go. It's in my backyard. I didn't really even initially plan on going. And after I had seen that he had tried to basically go the transparent route, I thought to myself, well, I should probably not put my name on this after I had already gotten rejected for a press pass. I had initially reached out and asked them to give me a press pass. They said it was full. I said, okay, that's interesting. I still see tickets for sale. So if I get one, will you let me in? And they said, probably not. You're probably out of luck. So someone, you know, I would say I described them as a local source, decided to front the ticket. They registered, picked it up, and then I just went inside. You know, I know that some people might say, oh, well, that's sneaky. That's not fair. But I think there are some clear ethics that we can look to when it comes to immersive journalism that I think, you know, this experience ticks the boxes with regard to exhausting your traditional methods and, you know, deciding that something is vital enough to the public interest to report on it. So I chose to do that. I, you know, just kind of picked up a pseudonym, defined a quick backstory. And thanks to folks such as yourself, I had enough context on, you know, the particulars of the QAnon movement to be able to convincingly, you know, chat my way through it if people asked who I was and why I was there. So, you know, I would say, you know, my experience was smooth overall. I'd say, you know, if this were Metal Gear Solid, I got an A rank. Brace got an S rank. He got all the side missions. He got deep in there. He really, really knocked it out of the park. But, you know, I think the circumstances are different there, right? You know, he's got a podcast that at face value, the name could be potentially interpreted as something that is sympathetic to the movement.
Yeah, that's all I could figure is that with a podcast name like True Anon, that they were like, oh, one of us.
Right.
Because this was like a QAnon conference. The organizers really, you know, they would put the damn, like, where we go on, we go all initials in the logo and like the posters and stuff. And then when people would confront them on it and be like, hey, this is a conspiracy theory movement that like the national intelligence apparatus of this country is like kind of concerned about what's up with this, they'd try to sort of downplay it.
Right.
And, you know, you mentioned Travis View getting sort of turned away when trying to get into the event. You know, the email that he posted that they sent them cited very explicitly that they did not think that he was nice enough to QAnon believers, and that is why they weren't going to let him in. But, you know, I mean, you did what you had to do to get in there, right? Because it totally was newsworthy. You know, this was a conference in Dallas that was, you know, attended by a whole host of QAnon people, but also featured speeches from major GOP political figures like Representative Louie Gohmert, right, and Alan West, who's chair of the GOP in Texas. And didn't you guys had like the agriculture commissioner? I don't know what the hell that's about. But
that's correct. Yeah, that's
so
correct.
So these major figures who have elected office, or in Alan West's case, have a steering wheel grip over the GOP in their state, are just coming in and playing footsies with this very unhinged conspiracy movement.
I think that's a polite way to describe it. I would describe this as a full open embrace because, you know, to your point about this being obviously a QAnon conference, the main organizer goes by QAnon John in Telegram, and his wife, Amy, also has a similarly Q-themed handle that she uses. They try to talk out of both sides of their mouth when it comes to this, as if, you know, all people who are looking at this are just, I don't know, stupid and have no understanding of what it means to be consistent. But unfortunately, I think there is an issue with regard to some in media and in journalism in terms of not having a deep enough understanding of what this was. Because, you know, I'll cite a specific example right here in Dallas. Dallas Morning News put out an article on Friday regarding, you know, sort of people coming in for the VIP reception and to register for the badges. And they didn't describe it at all as a QAnon-themed conference. They described it as a conservative conference where people were coming together to discuss God, politics, and like fellowship. So it was very, very upsetting to see it described in a way that really normalized it. And the fact that we have these major Republican figures speaking there and really openly embracing this movement, it's not a reason to normalize it. It's a reason to be very concerned about the direction that some in that party are going.
So you did manage to get in. Can you just, I mean, walk me through this thing. I guess the first place I want to start is something I learned because of something you tweeted, actually, which is about the venue itself. I looked it up on Google, and as you know, I was flipping through some photos, and I came across a mechanical bull, and I stopped there because I was like, all right, that tells me everything I need to know about this place. But you know, what can you describe that for people who aren't familiar?
Yeah. So what you're referring to is a place called Eddie Dean's Ranch. It's this place that a lot of people in Dallas don't really know about. It's not like a popular hangout by any means. It's an event venue specifically for events. One source of mine that actually also got into the conference incognito, not a journalist, had been there before. It's most known for hosting basically like amateur pro wrestling events, which this person had gone to several in the past. It's very Western themed. It's a pretty nondescript building that's tucked away behind the convention center, between the convention center and a highway. Something to be
On the outside, it looks like this just like metal warehouse thing.
Right.
Because those are like the first photos I saw, and then I'm flipping through and then I'm like, oh my God, it's a fucking Western town in here.
Yes, it is. It's a bit over the top. And it was landed on as a venue for them because their original venue, Gillies, which is a much more sort of traditional concert venue, they backed out due to some local pressure, I would say, kind of led by one particular local paper that I've written before, the Dallas Observer. They've been pretty on top of covering this you know, conference, so to speak, for weeks now, and really in an informed way. The other thing that is worth mentioning is that wasn't the only venue. The other venue was the Omni Hotel. There was a block of rooms that they had reserved there, as well as some ballrooms that were used. I went to the auction on Saturday night. That was in one of the big ballrooms in the Omni Hotel, and that's actually owned by the city of Dallas. But they didn't do anything to stop this from happening, and there's speculation that it's in part due to a previous legal battle that resulted in a $650,000 settlement because they had canceled a pornography festival in the past. And so I think they were very hesitant to pump the brakes on the Omni being a location for not only people to stay, but for portions of the event to be held. You know, none of our local officials have really said anything about this event either. You know, that's something to be thought about. And, you know, I could talk about that in more detail at a later time. But the situation was basically that people were going to and from the Omni Hotel to this Western themed kind of falling apart venue that's just a few blocks away.
So you're at the conference, lights, cameras, it's go time. Can you tell me what was happening on stage at this conference? Because there were, a couple dozen speakers? When they grabbed the mic, this was also, I believe, a live-streamed pay-per-view, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Although there were some unofficial live streams as well, it seems like some of these people are willing to eat each other for a dollar. There were unofficial free live streams that people were also doing. I have no idea what their thinking was in terms of allowing that while also having this pay-per-view thing, while also having some people pay, you know, massive amounts of dollars to even just come there in person. It didn't really seem very thought through or logical. But in terms of, you know, what happened on the stage, like you said, dozens of speakers. Their talking points were kind of all over the board. A lot of different threads.
The big headline, or the two big headlines I've seen come out that have hit, you know, the mainstream outlets like CNN, MSNBC, that kind of stuff, were Mike Flynn answering an audience question saying that, you know, what happened in Myanmar with the military coup, something like that should happen in the U.S. And then also Sidney Powell saying that, Trump will be reinstated into office sometime later this year.
Right.
Those are the two big ones. But what am I missing?
Gosh, there was so much. There was so much else that happened that really also bears talking about and paying attention to. Some of the speakers were, you know, promoting basically like a dominionist theocracy. One in particular, I could look up her name and you could put it in the show notes. She was explicitly saying that she thinks, you know, God-loving patriot Christians should be able to control the government and media and finance.
Like seven pillars type stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a fair representation. There was Jason Sullivan making a noose gesture after describing, you know, how he feels about Hillary Clinton. You know, George Papadopoulos kind of said his typical deep state stuff. At one point, he elicited a response from the crowd after he mentioned the Democrats. Someone yelled, you know, they should all be hanged. We had our Texas Agricultural Commissioner basically put on, you know, a really inappropriate 80s movie style Chinese accent when describing his, you know, stance on China. Just a whole mess of really, really salacious stuff. You know, there's Jason Sather talking about UFOs and, you know, reviving his favorite grift, chlorine dioxide. So it's really hard to characterize, you know, what happened on stage. There's no single narrative. You know, I've started using this silly pun. It's a bit of a quilt of threads. And that's because of the Q-themed quilt that was auctioned for $6,500 that Michael Flynn was proudly holding. And they were promising that it would be signed by all the luminaries, including, you know, people who weren't there like Lynn Wood. So, you know, not only was there so much that happened on stage that perhaps hasn't gotten enough attention yet or hasn't been, you know, considered seriously, but there were also a number of events that happened off stage or off the live stream that really add context to, you know, the overall sort of tone, tenor, and takeaways from the event. One thing that I really do want to emphasize.
Let's get into that, because, like, I know from my years covering CPAC and just, I mean, a whole host of just weird shit, right? Like, what makes it into the final reports? What catches the news? You know, even what happens on stage isn't always the full story. Like, at CPAC, oftentimes the best stories from CPAC are coming off the sidelines or it's stuff you see in the exhibit hall. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about, like, what this conference was like, you know, off of the live stream, the IRL, if you will.
Right. So a really notable set of things happened during the auction, and there's a lot of context that is worth describing. They auctioned not only this Q-themed quilt, they auctioned several bats, one of which Flynn described as the Department of Just Us. They auctioned off a whole series of Revolutionary War-themed portraits of folks like Trump and Flynn and Powell, and
to hang in one's home.
Correct. Yes? And those went for thousands. Huh. But the auctioneer's commentary was really, really, I don't know if illuminating is the word that I would put it, because they would describe this, you know, as a painting of Trump and Flynn firing the first shots in the Revolutionary War. So I don't even know if that's subtext. I think that's an overtone. Now, you consider that with what Flynn said, and then you sandwich that with the slides that I don't know if these have gotten a lot of play yet, but there were slides that were run during one segment which had the words, "The military is the only way." Take that for what you will.
Yeah, that's a very popular slogan among QAnon followers who essentially, you know, towards the latter part of the summer last year, especially and particularly after the election results were projected and then later certified, of course, you know, this idea that, you know, the traditional means of campaigning or fighting corruption or the deep state or whatever have been exhausted, and now the only way to save the country is to engage in a military coup, essentially.
Yeah.
I would agree with you. I don't know that that's really subtext. That's kind of just context,
right,
at this point.
These were not even These were not even veiled. And if they were veiled, they were extremely thinly veiled. It was sheer see-through.
It's weird, man. I can't imagine why they wouldn't want reporters.
So strange, you know? I mean, maybe it was the discussion of the Luciferian pedophile cabals or the global communist government. Maybe that's why they didn't want folks to, you know, report on it. Although they, you know, live streamed all of those speakers' thoughts straight into, you know, the internet. So it's really hard to say. Really hard to say. I think perhaps, you know, they didn't want folks to get a sense of the context of, you know, what were people casually describing or talking about at lunch, for example, or at the auction or afterwards. You know, the fact that Brace Belden, which I don't want to harp too much on this, but if you Google his name, you know, his Wikipedia says that he's an American communist. The fact that he got a full access press pass and was taking selfies with Flynn.
Literally fought with the YPG.
Quite literally fought with the YPG against ISIS. He took a selfie with Flynn where he's giving the Daesh salute, the single finger ISIS salute, which is obviously an ironic statement on his behalf. But it just blows my mind. It's so absurd and so many deep levels of irony that, you know, we had a conference in Dallas where they were openly describing their paranoia about some, you know, communist plot to take over the country and the world. Meanwhile, they have an actual communist podcaster backstage hanging out, you know, posting about how he's smoking weed with Sidney Powell, which, you know, I don't know if that happened, but I would like to think it did, because I definitely saw some people puffing on some vape pens that were not, you know, I lived in California. I know what those look like.
Oh, man, we got to absolutely hand it to Piss Pig Granddad here, Brace's first Twitter handle, I think.
It was. Memorial Day, we got to support our troops, right?
Right. That's what I've been saying this whole time. did you get a chance to talk to anybody there? I've covered some QAnon stuff on the ground before, different conferences. I went to this like QAnon rally they had on the National Mall on September 11th, 2018, I think. It's mm-hmm. hard to believe it's been that long. But something that always kind of like surprised me is you kind of, you know, I think most people go into these situations where they're going to be interacting with these people who believe this like truly outlandish and like bloodthirsty conspiratorial worldview. Mm-hmm. And then they meet them and like, instead of getting like frustrated with most people, I just got like really sad for them. Because it takes so much from them, you know. Did you get the chance to interact with any of the, you know, sort of regular Joes who were going to this conference?
I did.
If so, did you, you know, how did you feel about that? How did those conversations go?
So I did get to speak with some of them. You know, a couple things come to mind. You know, I sat down across a young man at lunch, and, you know, he described to me how he believes there's, you know, some sort of communistic New World Order government at a global level that's pulling the strings, and that if only we just didn't have that, then, you know, we would be living in a better place where we could be colonizing the moon or Mars. We wouldn't have wars. You know, he was saying he anticipated that there'd be a lot of, you know, chaos and tumultuousness, you know, quote unquote, the storm. Other folks, you know, kind of seemed borderline normal in some of their thoughts. They seemed attracted by the energy of the convention and maybe some of the speakers and ideas, but they didn't necessarily espouse entirely ridiculous ideas. And then you know, there's anybody in between. There's a whole range of people in between. Something that did stick out to me, though, was that they were all pretty kind and nice, because they assumed that I was there for similar reasons. And if I was asked why I was there, I'd say, oh, you know, I was interested in seeing this speaker or that speaker. And I would basically just try to kick it back over to them so I could understand a bit more why they were there. And a lot of people tended to have like one or two or three people in particular that they were really excited about seeing. A lot of people were really excited about seeing Flynn. and some Sidney Powell. Some people said, oh, I don't know a lot of who these speakers are, but I would really like them. So I kind of felt sad in a way. I felt unsettled about how hardened some of these beliefs and worldviews were. And frankly, just kind of confused about what do we do? Because so many of these people have gone so far deep into this set of beliefs, whether it's the, you know, communistic or the Luciferian or, you know, any of these other things, you know, they have gotten to the point where they feel alienated and ostracized and that they've, quote unquote, lost everything. And almost as a result have more deeply embraced this movement and this community.
Because it's what they have.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You know, it's what they have left.
Some people might compare that to like a cult, right? And how people become integrated with a cult. I mean, I think there's a lot of comparisons that could be made. I don't know if that one's inaccurate. I think a lot of it rings true. And it just leaves me a bit concerned about, well, what do we do? You know, what do we really do to reach people who have, you know, gotten this far? And I don't know if there's a clear answer to that.
Right.
But also, they're not necessarily the folks that I worry the most about. I mostly worry about the headliners, the power players. Why are they doing this? You know, are they true believers? Does it even matter if they're true believers? Because they're the ones that are drawing the people there. You know, when I would speak to people, they would usually name somebody that they were there to see speak. And so, you know, if we didn't have the Flynns of the world really doubling down on this and carrying this flag forward, I'm not sure if many of these people would still be following.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of what you're getting at there is a question that is definitely worth pondering. It's something that I'm still thinking about myself and will probably be thinking about throughout the years, which, you know, there's kind of this tendency when you report on extremism or you report on misinformation or disinformation, conspiracy theories, what, you know, basically what I've been doing my professional career by accident, kind of fell into this work. You know, it's really hard to write about sort of the broader changes that are happening in the country. You know, so oftentimes the way you get there is by writing about the specific actors in play, whether it is a group like the Proud Boys or a movement like QAnon. But the thing about like QAnon stuff is that, you know, every single person that follows QAnon or keeps up with QAnon, the people that are making up those view counts on weird QAnon videos, like, you know, they might not believe every single drop. They might be a bit more measured, but there is a sort of like foundation of worldviews that QAnon is built on. And those worldviews are getting incredibly more popular. It is very easy to spread those worldviews because they don't cost anything to cook up. To survive, they have to have a constant stream of misinformation poured into them, which just has this really corrosive effect. And if we really grapple with the fact that millions of people, I don't know if you saw that recent PRRI poll, that I think it had somewhere between 20 and 30% of Republican voters think that a satanic cabal runs the world. I guess the question is just like, how do we deal with that at scale? And is that something that we realistically can even hope to do?
It's heavy. On the one hand, when you're describing these foundational beliefs and worldviews, I thought about this a bit, you know, and I think you're probably more well-versed. You know, you're certainly more well-versed in this than I am, but something that I've sort of come to start taking as you know, I don't want to say it's a fact, but you know, something that I've started to believe about some of this and conclude about some of this is that a lot of these beliefs and worldviews aren't new. That there are threads that have existed right. in American politics in particular for, you know, decades, whether it's, you know, blatant, just, you know, Red Scare sort of stuff, or you could look at the Satanic Panic. You could look at, you know,
the freak out over metal music,
right? Or the deployment of things that are very similar to, if not identical to, blood libel. And the idea of, you know, pedophilic cabals. These things are not new. But what I do think about what's going on now is they're composed into a novel package in a way that perhaps they haven't been, you know, assorted before. And what's more, they are being promoted through a new set of platforms that we didn't have in the past. You know, perhaps in the past, you know, nonprofits could pump out some pretty wild propaganda during, say, like, you know, the Kennedy era. And he even explicitly would complain about some of these things. But now we've got, you know, at scale platforms that are sort of like a whack-a-mole issue where, you know, no matter how hard they try, they end up, you know, pushing something elsewhere. And it's not to say that, you know, just completely banning people from all platforms who think like this is necessarily the solution, but it certainly creates a whole new set of obstacles with regard to, you know, sort of limiting the uncontrolled nature of the spread of this wildfire. And I really just kind of keep going back to the folks that are ostensibly serious people and smart people and people of power and influence and the role that they play in at least encouraging this, because we've had a lot of fringe thoughts and ideas for a long time. There's been plenty of neo-Nazi groups in the United States.
Right.
There's been plenty of Christian fascist groups in the United States, but their reach has always been limited, and communities have often, if not always, been able to constrain them and push back against their ability to push their messages. You know, perfect examples like Patriot Front here in the DFW area. They're based in a suburb that I grew up next to. And there's a pretty intense effort on behalf of local activists here to make sure that every time they put up their stickers and all that stuff and promote their ideas, those things get taken down, because, you know, they're just tying into a long history of people pushing back against those sorts of extremist interventions in their local community. But when we've got something that's like QAnon, it's not really necessarily rooted in that. And it's moving through these platforms that are amplifying them, and people are continuing to create cottage industries around the movement to make money. And so, you know, the difference between true believers and grifters is kind of hard to identify. It's hard to differentiate. And it also, I don't know if it really even matters.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really hard to, I also wonder that, you know, whether it meant, does it matter if Michael Flynn is pushing QAnon because he believes it, or is the fact that he's pushing it the end of the story, really? Well, yeah. Stephen, I've taken up a fair amount of your time. Do you have any other, you know, kind of takeaways from this conference before we close out here?
Yeah. That, and I don't think this is going to be novel or news to you, but one big takeaway is that we need to be taking this seriously. We need to be taking some of this at face value. And we can't allow for this tendency to say one thing in public and another thing in private to continue unchecked. You know, we can't allow for a pretty open endorsement of a military coup sandwiched between other contextual suggestions that, you know, that's the way to go. We can't allow for them to just walk that back. Because, you know, then we become the rubes. We're the gullible ones. And so I think, you know, taking it seriously.
I would hate the idea that, like, I got played by somebody who believes, like, a shadow cabal is, you know, controlling their television remote when the batteries die.
Right. So I think that's one takeaway. Another is, and this is probably not news to you, that you know, certain reporters and stuff, if they're going to write about this, they need to actually do the research, and they need to add in the context, and they can't normalize it. And then, you know, the last takeaway is something that you may also be familiar with or have some belief around or understanding around, which is that these folks are very susceptible to information operations. I mean, you know, they didn't catch me, and I wasn't even really, you know, trying too hard. I didn't wear a disguise or anything. I didn't even create a digital fake backstory to reference. You know, Brace Belden got away with everything and had unfettered access. And all it really would have taken was like a minimum amount of due diligence to understand who he is. I'd been texting with him and I was like, how the hell did you do this? And he's like, I was deep undercover. I just said, he submitted the name Grace Belden instead of Brace Belden, which is, you know, pretty laughable. And it seems almost contradictory, right? That on the one hand, we should be taking it seriously, and we should not underestimate some of the competence of these people, you know, because just because their beliefs are absurd, but on the other hand, that they may be so incompetent that, you know, they could have this happen to them. But then again, you know, we saw, you know, Sacha Baron Cohen do that to Giuliani. So, you know, I think both of these things can be true.
Right. Well, I've been talking with Stephen Monticelli, publisher of Protean Mag and independent journalist in Dallas. Stephen, every guest on this show gets the same last question, and you're going to get it right now. What's your favorite thing on the internet today?
Well, I'm guessing you saw this yesterday on Twitter, and there has since been an article written up about how a rogue journalist convinced a number of right-wing politicians and public figures to retweet a photo of Lee Harvey Oswald on Memorial Day.
Ken Klippenstein.
Yes, Mr. Ken Klippenstein pulled his classic prank, and a number of people got clipped. And that's probably my favorite thing on the internet right now, because it really just it illustrates almost one of the points that I was just making, which is the hilarious incompetence of some of these people and their lack of historical understanding. But it also pokes fun at the, you know, the idea that we should have a day that just blanket, quote unquote, supports our troops while simultaneously, you know, one, we have plenty of troops who have done some things that those folks may not support. And then two, you know, got a shocking level of homelessness amongst our veteran population. So one of my favorite things on the internet for a number of reasons.
Yeah, I think my favorite interaction that Ken had was with Candace Owens.
Oh, yes.
Who thought that Ken had photoshopped Lee Harvey Oswald's face onto a soldier, which...
Doesn't get any better than that.
I know. It's just beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Chef's kiss.
That truly an intellectual leader in the conservative movement.
I couldn't agree more. I'm just so pleased to see you know, that have happened. But it's unfortunate that, you know, Ken got fired as a result, and now he's got to go on Substack. So you know, hope Candace Owens is a supporter of freedom. I know that's a joke. It's not serious.
No,
but God, the level of inception that guy is able to go into.
Yeah, it is a joke. It's not serious. So definitely do not reply to Candace Owens on Twitter. Asking if she's happy that she got Ken fired.
Yeah, that would be uncouth. Definitely don't do that, folks. Don't do that.
You're gonna look like a big old goober if you do that. You've fallen for the old trickeroony. All right. On that note, Stephen, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas.
That was my interview with Stephen Monticelli. Go check out his work. He does great reporting, very thoughtful writing. If you're a fan of the show, you'll be a fan of his. And with that, that's a about what we've got this week. I'll give a plug to the Substack before we get out of here. If you like the show, you like what you hear, and you want more content like it, you can subscribe on Substack at shtpost.substack.com, where upon subscribing, you'll get access to a whole archive of bi-weekly newsletters that I've put out in between episodes. So you'll get an episode 1 week, and you'll get a newsletter the next week that deals with the same kind of content. If you want to get access to that content and you can't afford it for whatever reason, you're a gig worker, you've lost your job, you don't have to get into the details. Frankly, it's none of my business. Just hit me up privately and tell me that you'd like to access it, but you can't afford it, and I'll make sure you're hooked up and you can get through it. I appreciate any support I can get, but I also don't want this to be a cost prohibitive project. And with that, this has been Jared Holt signing off.